And in what I gave you, in the papers that I gave you, so we're up to on page Resh Chavav, Kuf Pei, the last Torah on page Resh Chavav. Again, we're going to learn a few small Torahs today, and then we're going to do something from the parasha, Mirz Hashem. There will only be probably two more classes because I just have Hashem Simchas, so many Simchas in June. So I'm hoping this next week looks like it's fine. If that next week looks like it's fine, but after that, I don't think it's going to be possible. So let's try it again as much as we can. On page Resh Chavav, the last Torah there, Adoni Mari Rabbi Mishulutze Omar. Perish apostik he call Elohei Ha'amim Elilim v'Hashem Shamayim Atzah. Now we say that every morning at the beginning of Pesukei Dezimran, Hard Lashem Ki Tov, and Hard Lashem Kiru B'Shmo, we say that pasuk, and we have to be careful to say the pasuk properly. So we say Ki call Elohei Ha'amim Elilim. That means all of the gods of the nations are Elilim, which means idols. The simple translation is are idols. Then we stop, we pause, and we say, Hashem, but a God, Hashem really, Shamayim Asa. He's the one who created the world. So, the deeper meaning of this is, Omar Pek Kodsho, She'etzel Ha'amim, Hu Elokusa Yisborach, V'chol Avadosam Elav Rak Bebchinas El, or Al, V'sulo. Now, what the Tzaddik here is explaining is, why is it that idolatry is called Elilim? Elilim. And even though we find that Hashem, of course, one of the ways that Hashem is referred to is Aleph Lamed is Kel, but here in the plural. So the Tzaddik is explaining that the word El by itself, or certainly in this way Elilim, it means the negative. It means not, like the word in Hebrew Al means low, means not to do something. So he says that. All of the service of the nations is only Al. We'll see what that means in a minute. Vesulo, nothing more than that. Even though, of course, it's possible for a non-Jew to do something that's good. Certainly they do things that are good. He says, this is the point, and this is discussed at length in the Ramchal and the writings of the Mekubalim, that certainly it's possible for any human being to do something which is good and worthwhile. And not only that, but a person is rewarded for doing something that's good. A non-Jew is rewarded for anything that he does, also that's good. But what's the difference between the actions of a Jew and a non-Jew? So according to the Tzaddikim, according to the Mekubalim, the difference is that whereas everything that a Jew does, even if it's the smallest, tiniest little gesture, this tiniest little act has an effect, makes an impact upon the entire universe. It affects reality. Everything that a Jew does, everything that he thinks, and everything that he says makes an impact upon reality. However, when it comes to a non-Jew, they don't know, and they don't want to know, and they don't realize that it's possible for a human being in this world, for a human being to actually have that effect upon the higher world. The Gormim Tanug Benachas Ruach LaHashem is Baruch, the next page. Sha'omar V'naser Itzono. And it's beyond the comprehension of the nations of the world that the actions of human beings can actually bring about, can actually cause there to be Nachas Ruach, the light and pleasure in the higher world, that any small thing has this great significance. Mm-hmm. They can't see the truth. They can't see the truth that when a human being does something to the best of his ability, that makes a pu'ul, that makes a roshim, it causes something in the higher world. And that's the meaning of he called Elohei Ha'amim Elilim, that the gods, or the relationship that the nations have to God, is Elilim, which means Shahagam Shalafamim Misar Belibam Ezenitzaitz Taiv. Certainly it's possible that even the heart of an Anju, there can be a spark of something which is good and holy. umida taiva, and some good characteristic, mikachas galus alakusiyas barach ba'olam, and even a non-Jew certainly can sense the presence of God in the world and feel excited about godliness. It's true. Aval etzlam hurak bechinas elilim. In the end, it's bechinas elilim, which means it doesn't have any positive benefit to the world. It doesn't make any positive contribution to the world. The fact that a non-Jew senses God's presence does not, the point here, he says, is not so much whether the non-Jew can sense that there's a God. It's possible for a non-Jew to do something good and to believe in God also. And certainly he could be excited, a non-Jew could be excited about God's existence and God's presence. There's no question about it. But the problem is what happens to that emotion, what happens to that feeling. Doesn't influence his behavior because he doesn't believe in the depths of his heart that ultimately that this word or this thought or this little action can make a difference. That's why, he's not saying that it's not possible. If there, Ben Noach, even though in the Ramchal's writings we find that the actions of a non-Jew do not affect the higher world, but there are different levels of effect and influence. Certainly it seems that somebody who keeps the seven mitzvahs, B'nai Noach, Anju, who observes his mitzvahs, can create a stir in the higher world. Not the same as a Jew who's Mekayim mitzvahs, but certainly there can be an influence upon the higher world. But the problem is not so much the belief in God, but belief in man. Or belief in God's belief in man. That's the issue here. That's why non-Jews are generally very disturbed and troubled by Torah Shebichtav. They admire the written Torah. The written Torah is something which they consider to be a masterpiece themselves, and they love to read it, and they read it l'havdil in their places of idol worship and so on. The written Torah is something which they're fine with. But when you start telling them that according to Halacha, you have to tie this, you put this shoe on first, you tie the other one first, you have to wash Nagel Vas, and you have to do this, you have to make every single movement that you make in life requires thought and focus and concentration. And everything in life is either it's a mitzvah or it's an aveira. This is something that, in other words, the oral tradition is something which is beyond the comprehension of a non-Jew. It's beyond the comprehension of a non-Jew. Because what does the oral Torah say? What is the meaning of Torah Shavua Peh? The oral Torah means that every single moment of life is filled with meaning. And that every single thing that you, not just when you're standing, not just when you're praying, not just when you're doing some, you're walking, a disabled person across the street, or you're doing some nice, good deed. That certainly the non-Jews have also, and they read the stories of Tanakh, and you see that people should be good, and they shouldn't be bad, and so on. And that a Jew should be able to persevere and to observe every tiny little halacha and to worry that, to worry whether or not this, there was a drop of milk, whether or not it was nullified in the chicken soup or not, whether it was actually not. This is something that in the mind of a non-Jew is absurd. And therefore this completely distant from Torah Shebaal Peh. And the bris, the covenant that Hashem made with the Jewish people is over the Torah Shebaal Peh, because Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, means that everything that you do makes a difference. And that's what the Rebbe's explaining, Ki kol Elohei ha'amim elilim, which means that the problem is that they can believe in God. The problem with the non-Jew is, despite his belief in God, elilim means that his whole belief in God is, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. And it means that it doesn't have any kiyum, any good feeling or belief or thought. It can't continue because it doesn't connect to a specific act or specific deed. It's just something which is left up to one's thoughts or one's feelings, and it doesn't have a connection to every single moment of the person's life. And also, since he doesn't believe that his actions make a difference. And that since it doesn't make a difference, so therefore, ultimately, it doesn't last. That's what the Rebbe's explaining. V'chol ha'dover, that's what he means. Ha'letzlam hurak b'chinis elilim shu kelo choshuv. V'chol ha'dover ha'tov misbatel mi'itam tekef. Therefore, any awakening of something good doesn't have a key, doesn't last, because a person who feels that his actions are insignificant, that his actions don't mean anything, they might mean something to the other person. or they might have some significance, but as far as everything that a person does having this effect upon the higher world, it's not something that he's capable of believing. It becomes nothing. It becomes unimportant. It becomes insignificant. And that's connected to the next Torah, which is on the subject of Az the Kedusha. Az the Kedusha means that a person has to have chutzpah. We've spoken about this many times. And here, this is a topic that's very, very important in the teachings of the Yidda Kaddish of the Holy Jew from Pshischa and all the tzaddikim. Matzasi b'shem ha'arizal b'shinui loshing sas. This is actually brought down in the Shem Yishmul from Shmuel Sachetshav. Behind the she'ikar chisorn v'adam she'enu makir ma'ilas nafsha. He says the main thing that's lacking in a person, the main problem of the Jew that's holding him back from reaching higher madregas, from really, really becoming who he could become, the main thing that's lacking, he's enu makir ma'ilas nafsha. He doesn't recognize the greatness of his own soul. He doesn't recognize, he doesn't realize, he doesn't acknowledge his own greatness. Shivim hayameir lenegd einav mihu. Because if it would be shining before his eyes, if it would be clear to the person who he really is, umam maloso. This is connected to the last piece. And what's his maila? How great he is. Lo yevshel lovely deve. He would never be able to sin. This is also something that certainly in Christianity, the human being is a product of sin. He's a loathsome, pitiful, despicable being that maybe, you know, by God's grace and by the good grace of the Lord, maybe he could be pulled out of the pits of hell, the pit of hell. Maybe. So there's no recognition of the mile of the greatness, the greatness of a human being and who a human being is. And therefore, certainly if a person doesn't feel that he's great, then why would he be able to have any impact upon the higher world? Why would anything that he accomplishes have any long-lasting effect or meaning? And if a person doesn't believe that, if a person loses that belief, that his actions, even his smallest thoughts or words or actions, make a tremendous difference, if a person doesn't believe that, then it's only a matter of time. Why should he go on? He doesn't feel like going on. There's no point in going on. So that's what the Rebbe's saying here. That if Hayameyel Leneged Einav Mihu, if it would be clear to him who he is, Umam Aloso, and what his greatness is, Lo Hayav Shalav LeDeaveh, he wouldn't be able to do a sin. El Shechosel Adam Oiz, Shehu Courage, Veloshen Ashkenaz. What a person is lacking, he calls Oiz, which he translates, which is in the German, courage. Right? Courage. Sounds like it. I don't know. I didn't ask anybody that speaks German. I have to ask Harry Siederbaum, or that's my father later, if that's a word that's being used in German. B'loshon Ashkenaz. K'moy sh'oma ha-Rebbe HaKadosh, Rebbe Bunim Pshischa l'Rabba Yehudi HaKadosh Zatzal. Sh'sha'olohu ma'ashoma chadoshos b'yosef b'danzig. You know, Mitzvah Shem, after the summer, we're going to be talking for a while about the Rebbe Reb Simcha Bunim Pshischa. So Reb Simcha Bunim Pshischa, his profession was that he was a pharmacist. And he had a practice in Danzig, in Germany. The Rebbe Bunim was a pharmacist before he became a Rebbe. He was actually a pharmacist. So the Yidda Kaddish asked him, "Nu, tell me something that you heard, some news that you heard when you were in Danzig in Germany. What did you hear?" So the Rebbe Bunim said to him, "V'ama sheshomar avedas momen enu klum." That he heard in Danzig, that he heard what? That losing money doesn't mean anything. V'avedas courage, hu aveda b'kula. But if you lose your courage, If you lose your strength, you lose your courage, then you've lost everything. That's what he heard in Danzig. V'zehu meleches ha-yetzahar. This is the main work of the Yetzahar. U'bezeh mitzudoso prusa kol ha-chaim. And this is the trap that the Yetzahar, that the evil inclination sets to destroy the person. Shekashenitol mehem ha-courage. So when a person loses his courage, and he's not talking about being macho, you know, being a tough guy. He's not talking about that kind of courage. It means, like it says, ein oiz elatayra. Oz means strength, and courage means Torah. But it means what we were talking about before. That belief that no matter what he's done in his life, that every single thing is important in Hashem's eyes and that he is precious in Hashem's eyes. If a person doesn't have that oiz, that courage, that azus, you know, there's a teaching from the Rebbe of Uri Strelitzker. It says in the Gemara that before Mashiach comes, the world is going to be filled with unbelievable chutzpah. Right? Chutzpah Yazgi. It says before Mashiach comes, there'll be the biggest chutzpah in the world. So the Rebbe Uri Strelitzker says, you know what the chutzpah is going to be at the end of time? He says the chutzpah is going to be that people who could barely read a pasuk in Chumash and don't understand a page of Gemara, people who could barely open the Master Daven, they're still going to have the chutzpah to want to be good Jews. They're going to still have the chutzpah, God's panim, the nerve to get close to God. He says that's the chutzpah that's going to be at the end of time. If not that chutzpah, the Rebbe Uri Strelitzker said like everything, then they'll be just stam chutzpah, plain old fashioned chutzpah, which nowadays the chutzpah. The chutzpah is unbelievable chutzpah, you know? When the chutzpah, in other words, what the Gemara is saying is that at the end of time there'll be a spirit of chutzpah in the world. And like anything, the question is how are you going to use that chutzpah? For those people who use it in the wrong way, so they're going to be using it, you know, like to pull shtick on their Rebbe, you know, in yeshiva. Or the chutzpah of young people, how they mistreat older people. And all the things that the Gemara tells us are going to be at the end of time that are going to be manifested in that chutzpah, which we see. It doesn't have to be explained. The whole world is filled with chutzpah. The whole media, entertainment, it's all one big shtick chutzpah. That's all it is. It's all chutzpah as is panim. So what Rabbi Uri Strelitzker was saying, what the Gemara was saying is at the end of time, there'll be tremendous chutzpah in the world. The question is, how will you use that chutzpah? Either you're going to use it for something which is destructive, or that chutzpah is going to be. I mean, what does it mean to be chutzpah? To be mechutzef. I mean, to be a mechutzef. The way that they use it in America, you know, even the non-Jews already start to use the word. You know, they'll say a chutzpah or something. But chutzpah means like gall, something, you know, audacity. So the emes is that there is audacity to the fact that a Jew will have the azus that despite the fact that he's done. Rabbi Stolsky said that the guy did a million avers in his life. And let's say his mouth is filled with lashon hara and mechilas and with filth and impurity. He'll still stop and say, okay, that's true, but I still want to say Kriya Shema. He says, that's a chutzpah. But it's the kind of chutzpah that's going to bring Mashiach, right? That chutzpah is a very creative and wonderful, that's a wonderful chutzpah. It's an Aziz the Kedush, it's an Aziz Panim. It's an Aziz Panim. that we have now that's available to us. This is the courage that the Rebbe's talking about. It's a courage of Torah. It's a courage to be a Jew, despite the fact it's not a chutzpah. The Ramban talks about that the Jewish people by nature, the Jews are called Azan Shebu Umas, the most chutzpahic people in the world are Jews. Why? So that when Nebuchadnezzar, it says in the Gemara, when Nebuchadnezzar was king in Babel, there wasn't a human being in the entire world that smiled. Could you imagine? He had, the world was in such terror, was so intimidated, was so frightened by that man, there wasn't a human being that smiled in the whole world. They were so afraid. Even people who lived thousands of miles away, they were afraid. And they felt depressed. And that's how frightening a man he was. And Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah said to him, when he told them to bow down to Avodah Zarah, right? Because Nebuchadnezzar said that they should bow down to him. So you remember what they said, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, the Gemara says, they said that you and a dog are the same. In other words, they said you're a dog. We don't bow down to dogs. So the Ramban says, could you imagine the Rishonim say, a chutzpah? Such a chutzpah? Because the Jewish people have unbelievable chutzpah. And that's an Aziz Panim, that's a Jewish Aziz Panim. If it's not used in a good way, then Jews have the capacity to be very chutzpahic and to be very audacious. It's not a true. But when it's used in holiness, it's a kind of a courage. It's the kind of a courage that can bring a Jew close to Hashem despite all the things that are in his way. As the tzaddik said that when a person loses his courage, he loses his oz, then he loses his strength. His hands become weakened. Then he becomes like an open city without any wall. Anything can happen to him. He's lacking. He's completely lacking in courage. Therefore, he's totally vulnerable to the yetzahar. He doesn't have the chutzpah to stand up to the yetzahar. It's a chutzpah. It's a chutzpah. A person has to be able to talk to the yetzahar with a chutzpah. Which means that the Yetzirah comes and tells a person to do something, the person has to be able to talk back to the Yetzirah. And to have a chutzpah, to have an asas panim, to answer the Yetzirah. Most people, when it comes to the Yetzirah, they're very, very refined and gentle and proper. Right? When it comes to the Yetzirah, then they have more chutzpah. But if the Yetzirah is telling you something, you have to be able to be chutzpahic. You have to give it back. You have to have courage to fight against these things. Another means, even though the whole world is different, A Jew shouldn't be embarrassed of who he is. He has to dress properly, to act properly, even though they look at you like you're crazy, and people think that you're out of your mind. And what's the matter? That's a certain Azaz Pon. That's an Azaz Kedusha. Not to care, not to be afraid what people will think of you, but to do what you believe in, to live the right life. It doesn't make a difference if this person thinks of you this way or that way. That takes Azaz, and that's an Azaz Kedusha. And that's what the Rebbe Budim heard in Danzig. He said that if a person, you know, if you lose your money, you haven't lost anything. What does that mean? But if you lose your courage, then you've lost everything. Then you don't have anything in this world. And it's so true. This next piece is connected to this as well. Hayisi Mevad Echad, the Marav Tzadik of Ayaleb Epstein, as the Tzadik from Ozhrev, Abrismil of Armaliki Skeno, Tzadik HaKadosh, Rav Ayaleb Shmapali, Omar B'Shem Rabbi Yehudi HaKadosh. Okay, we got to the name. So it's the Yid HaKadosh. So what did the Yid HaKadosh say? It's a very interesting thing. Again, it's so chaval, because these are only tiny pieces of what the Yid was saying. Remember, the Yid taught thousands and thousands of hours of Torah. And this little, we have these little pieces that are left. So he said once, "Kil adam tzarich liyos shtei feig," and shtei means like this. It's a way of saying, you know, when something is foolish, it's narishkeit, and a person goes like this with his, he makes a simon with his hand, with his finger. It's mavat, like it's narishkeit, right? Silly. So the Yid HaKadosh said that a person has to know, has to have two of these kind of hands to be able to make, like it's narishkeit. What? He said, Shemara mikoidem ha'echad la'atzmai. That means that, ha'adam sarach liyos l'shtei, yeah, as much like Noah, uch shemara mikoidem ha'echad la'atzmai. One is that when he starts to think too highly of himself, he has to be able to go to himself. To yourself you have to go like that. Mostly we're very good at doing that with other people. That whatever, you know, you say, it's not, he doesn't know what he's talking about, is this, is that, everybody makes like it's not, you know. So the Yid HaKadosh said first, the Jew has to know how with himself, not to take himself so seriously. You know, you be mavat to yourself. And then, he says, he says, once you're a person, you know how to do this to yourself, then already when other people are different from you, and other people are challenging you, and other people are telling you to not to be the way that you know that it's right, then you have the kaiches to be able to say to the other person, to go like that to the other person. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean you have to physically go to people and, you know, wave a hand in their face, but it means you're not machshiv it. Because you know the truth is that when a person is machshiv himself very, very much, when he thinks very, very highly of himself, so certainly he thinks very highly of what other people say also. About him. Not about what other people say in general, but about him, he cares a great deal. The people, we've discussed this before, the Sfarim say that those people who walk around always ba'atzis, always sad and depressed, somebody said this about me, somebody said that about me, I'm worthless, I'm gornish, I'm a nobody, I'm a nothing. So the tzaddikim say those people, the whole atzis, the whole sadness comes from the ego. Because if you really held yourself to be nothing, then what difference does it make to what that person said about you? Why do you care what he said about you? What difference does it make? He said about you. It doesn't make a difference. I was just with somebody the other day, and there was somebody that was doing something very inappropriate. And at this Talmud Chacham, he's like, you know, a Talmud Chacham sometimes can be like this. And he said straight, you know, he didn't. He said to this person, "What are you doing? What are you doing? You're not allowed to do that. It's ridiculous." And the person was very angry, and he marched out. He marched out. You know, he made a whole scene. He marched out. So I said to that Talmud Chacham, "I think you're going to have to, you know, I think he's hurt. I think the other fellow's hurt." So his attitude was, so I said, you know, he's upset with you. He goes, so now, not talking about in terms of whether or not he should try to calm him down or not, but he wasn't dispelled at all what that person thinks of him. He felt that was the correct thing, whether it was or wasn't. I happen to agree, you know, but I would have, you know, so I would have tried to do it maybe in a more delicate way. That's only because I'm lacking in this kind of, in this attitude, which is really, there's a certain kedusha in that, although it doesn't always make you the most popular person at the party. That's for sure. Like, you don't win any popularity contest. But the emes in this person, the truthfulness was that you have to stop doing this. What you're doing is wrong. he felt it was having a bad influence, a bad impact upon some kids that were there. It's the wrong thing to do. And the person doesn't like me. So he says, okay, so he doesn't like me. That doesn't make a difference to me. I'm not involved in that. He's supposed to stop. And if he doesn't like me, so he doesn't like me. He'll say bad things and he'll say bad things about me. He doesn't care. Mamish doesn't care. And I've seen this person in situations like this where somebody would like say the craziest things about him because he's a strong personality. Someone say the craziest thing. It's bechlal, not nispal. Doesn't mean a thing. Why? Because he's not machshav himself. What's important to him is the truth. It's not, so you have these people that they're always being hurt and offended by everything that someone, by anything that this person looked at me the wrong way. This person thinks the wrong thing about me. This person this, this person that. So you think that person has no self-esteem. The emes is that he's the biggest balgaiva. Those are people who have the largest egos. Because if they didn't have any ego, if they didn't, then it wouldn't bother them what that person thinks about them or what the person says about you. What's the nafkim what he thinks about you? You have to do the right thing. If somebody thinks that about you, say think that about you. What difference does it make to you what they think about you? Right? Yeah, Ramatis. Not only that, not only doesn't get hurt, it gets stronger. Forget the earth, when you trample upon it, it gets even tougher, right? It gets stronger. Okay, so shame tov is Allah Kulan, right? It's important to have a shame tov. But the shame tov here that does not mean, what does it mean to have it? It doesn't mean to create. To worry about creating an image for yourself. it means the person who has a shem tov is the one with the best name ultimately is the one who doesn't worry about having a shem tov. Like it says also in Pirkei Avos, right? Habarech min ha-kavod, right? The person who's running away from kavod. So then that shem tov chases after him, runs after him. Because it's true that a shem tov, there is concern that a person should be pleasant in the eyes of other people, but not at the expense of being truthful and honest. And what happens very often is this, you see that this obsession that people have with what does this person think of me, or how does this person think, you know, about me. So this very often cripples people from moving ahead in their lives and accomplishing what they need to accomplish. They're so completely consumed by that they can never do anything because they're always calculating what effect, you know, what are people going to say about me? What are they going to think about me? That doesn't mean that you could to be impolite, or to be unconcerned with how something affects people. But the issue is that doesn't concern you whether you're popular or not popular, do the right thing. And you try to do it in as pleasant and polite a way as possible. But that's the main tachlis of a person's life. So that's what the Rebbe's saying. So only the person who's able to go like this to himself and say, yeah, you're not so chashiv. He's also able to do it to other things. He doesn't have to take everything else in the world so seriously. Doesn't get him so upset. But if he's machshiv himself, if he holds himself to be so chashiv, so then everything in the world, anything in the world that has to do with him, he gets right away all upset and hurt and he's, and, right? How come they didn't put me in the right seat? Or how come they didn't give me the right aliyah? How come his whole life is with tiredness and complaints because why? Because he's machshav himself. He's machshav himself. Even though you would think that he's not machshav himself at all. You would think that he's not machshav himself because the way he goes, like, look, nobody likes me, nobody cares for me, I'm nobody, I'm nothing, I'm gonish. But I once told you that Rav Soloveitchik said to us, he said an unbelievable thing. You know, that the Briskas didn't go for the Bali Musa, I don't know if you know about that. The Briskas didn't go for that whole business. So I remember once Rav Soloveitchik was saying that he was learning someplace. He was in a certain town. And they had in the room above the Beis Medrash where he was learning, there was a Musa room. It means where they used to have these fellows that they would go beat up on themselves, this whole thing. So Rav Soloveitchik was learning downstairs and he heard this guy screaming upstairs. Ich bin gornisht, ich bin stick this, I'm worthless, I'm nothing, I'm a clump of dirt, I'm, and he's going on and on and on, and Rav Soloveitchik said, ich bin this, ich bin das, he's I, I never saw such an egomaniac in my whole life. He couldn't take it, that's all he ever talks about is I, me. There's nothing else in the world wanting to talk about somebody else. I'm nothing, I'm worthless. Only you. Right? Or like they say, what's that joke that they make, this guy is saying, like this rabbi sitting there, there's another guy that's saying, I'm takich, I'm nothing, I'm this. So the rabbi says, who do you think you are saying that? Who do you think you are making yourself into nothing? Like, who do you, I'm chashiv. For me to say that I'm nothing, it means something. For you to say you're nothing, what does that mean? right? Doesn't mean anything. Look who says it. He's a nobody. Look who's a nobody. I'm a nobody. Who do you think you are that you're a nobody? Right? So we understand that so much pain, so much aggravation comes from this. So much that comes from this. Ayin tov, a good eye. This is a very big yesod. Very, very big yesod. He says, Shamati sha Yehudi HaKadosh Omar, How does one begin to become a generous person? If you're closed up and it's hard for you to be good, if you're by nature stingy and tight, then how do you open yourself up to be generous? So he says, Mitchilin Hayidut Shnip Tabak. No Yehuda. You give a little bit on Shabbos, you go around a little bit with a tabak, to give a smell from, you know what I'm talking about? So it's a snuff, right? To give a little bit shnip tabak. You give a little bit. In other words, a person has to start somewhere. And very often what a person thinks is, he wants to begin in some grand, spectacular way to do something. And his whole life, he's just like waiting for the opportunity and he can't bring himself to do it. So the Yidakadah says, you know what? Don't make all this chashbainis. Take something which is tiny, like going around the shnip tabak. To go a little bit to give some snuff for people to give a smell Shabbos, whatever in shul. And he says, then after that's vatakach, oidim in luka titten, which means then you give somebody a pipe, you lend them your pipe, you know, they used to have as a big thing. Is you work your way up a little bit, from a little bit shnip tabak to a little bit the pipe, you work yourself up. Lahenus l'chaveir. You begin by giving your chaver, a friend, some hana. Begin by giving Jews a little bit of hana, a little bit of pleasure. To give a Jew a little bit of pleasure. That's how you begin to open yourself up to be a big bal tzedakah. You don't start right away with a big check. You don't start with this and with that. A shnip tabak a little bit. You begin to give somebody hana, to give somebody a pleasure. Keseida b'hadroga ad sheyargel b'midah nedivus, until you become a person, slowly but surely you become a person that b'teva you become. You know, you're a person that's very giving and that's very generous. I once told you here in shul there was a ma'aser. It's a gevaldig ma'aser. So I'll just tell it to you now, b'kitzur, just in 5 minutes. But there was a ma'aser that was actually the Balatanya, the Rabbi Elimelech, and could be Kedushas Levi, I think. But the Balatanya and the Rabbi Elimelech and Kedushas Levi, so it's a good lineup. So what happened was that There was a chasna that night. I'm sure some of you remember this story. There's supposed to be a big chasna. The tzaddikim were marrying off a Yosem and a Yosayma. There were two orphans. That the tzaddikim, these two orphans were working in this for the same. They were working for the same gvir, for the same wealthy person, and they started to like each other. No, they're working in the same place. They started to like each other, but they had no one that would marry them off, or get them, pay for a chasna and get them an apartment and get them started. They were never orphans. So the tzaddikim got wind of this, and the tzaddikim decided to make them a chasna. And they had to raise a lot of money to make a chasna, because it wasn't only chasna, it was to get blankets and pots and pins and a place, so it was the whole thing. So they were so happy, they were maybe in town, they were able to make, this was in Mezvich, they were able to make a chasna, for this couple. And it was, the night came for the chasna. Now, in that town, there was the Poritz, the landowner, the non-Jew, who owned basically the rights to everything in that town, was not only that he was a big anti-Semite, he was also a big ganav, and he owed the government 10,000 rubles. He owed the government 10,000 rubles, that he was playing games with the money. He was in trouble, and if he didn't come up with 10,000, he had to have the 10,000 rubles by a certain day. And if he didn't have the 10,000 rubles, then they were going to take him, the government was going to take him away. The Tsar, they were going to take him away. And the trouble there meant that you were finished. They were going to kill him. So how does the pirates get 10,000 rubles? So the pirates came out with a very big announcement. Oh, no, what they did is like this. What he did was that morning, after davening, was the morning, that night was supposed to be the wedding. The morning, right after shul. So he was waiting that anti-Semite with a couple of thugs. And when the chassan Nebuch, when he came out of shul, the fellow who was supposed to get married, the orphan, when he came out of shul that morning, the thugs grabbed him, and they kidnapped him, and they threw him, the pirates into a, they threw this fellow into a dungeon, and they locked him up, and the pirates announced that if you want your little chassan back for the wedding, in the Jewish community ask him about 10,000 rubles. If not, I'm going to kill him by tonight. So what are they going to do? So 10,000 rubles in Mezrich, you know, and they just squeezed out every penny to make the wedding, then to get 10,000 rubles. So the Maisa was that they didn't even know where to get. They got together, you know, 300, 400, they were getting in a pennies, cupics, what people had to give. So the Baal Tanya said, the Baal Tanya was the youngest of the Mezrich Maggid students, but the Baal Tanya said that he had an idea, and he said that there was a certain Jew who was married to a non-Jewish woman who lived in a palace. He himself was like Gishmad. He already gave up Yiddishkeit many, many years before. He had nothing to do with Jews. And outside of the town, he lived in a gorgeous mansion, a gorgeous palace. But he was such a Rosh Marusha that he had a sign that if anybody that comes, any Meshulach that comes to the door, he's going to set the dogs on them. He was such a, you know, nobody could come to collect money from him. So the Baal Tanya said to Kedushas Levi, to the Beditshava, and to the Rabbi Elimelech, he said, I want to go to that Jew whose name was Reb Zev, to get the 10,000 rubles. So Kedushas Levi and Rabbi Elimelech says, what are you talking? Are you crazy? The man is going to set the dogs on this. He hasn't given a penny in all the years to the Jewish community. Nothing, not a penny. So Tanya said, I'm telling you it's going to be okay. But you can come with me on the condition that everything that I say you go along with, you don't say one. You remember this, Maisa? You remember? No? So, you know this, Maisa? He says, on the condition that you don't say a word. He said to Kedushas Levi and to Rabbi Lamel. So they went with the Baal Tanya, the three of them went, and he opened the door, and it was such a shock to see the three famous Rebbes, that even though normally he was like a terrible rough guy, but he was caught off guard that these three famous rebbes came, and he invited them in, and the Kedusha Levi and the Rabbi Elimelech looked silent, and the Baal Tanya began to go this whole story about this bride and groom, and they wanted to get married for such a long time, and we raised the money to make a wedding, and then this happened with the pirates, with the anti-Semite, and he told them the whole story. So this fellow Zeb said, you should know that I'm really moved by what you're saying. So tell me, how can I help you? When the words come out of the Baal Tanya, you know, it's even a rock. So he said, what can I do to help? So he said, the Tanya said, look, he made an ultimatum that we have to have 10,000 rubles by tonight. And if you don't have the 10,000 rubles, so then he's going to kill the chassan. So the man said, that's a lot of money, 10,000 rubles. So the Tanya said, look, whatever you could do to help, we'd appreciate it. So he said, look, let me go to my room. And get the money. And he comes back, and he comes back with a little thing, and he says, you know, I've never done this, if anything else, but I'm so moved by what you said, and I'm so inspired about, so I want to give this as a gift. And he gave one penny, one kopeck. So, you understand, the Kedushas Levi and the Rabbi Elimelech, they mamish wanted to tear the guy, to tear him to pieces. They couldn't believe the guy gave him one penny. So the Alter Rebbe looked at the penny, and he said, you have no idea how much this means to us. It's such a generous and loving gift. And it really is very, very, I'm very touched that you would do this. And it means a great deal to us and to the Chassan and to the Kala. And I send you their thanks and so on. He gave him a big hug, and they walk out of there. And the Rebbe Lamech could lose his life. They wanted to say something, and Tanya said, shh. You don't say anything. They're walking. As they're walking a little bit, all of a sudden, the miser, the Zev, comes running after them, and he said, you know, I'm thinking about it. It's such a sad thing. The chasna, you know, and he gives now another penny. So the Tanya says, two kopecks, guys. It's unbelievable. I never saw that. Tanya makes a whole big deal. And then, you know, so the Tanya says, thank you. So, you know, this is unbelievable. And then they go weiter, and he comes, Bekitza. This took for 2 hours. By the end of the 2 hours, they had the whole 10,000 rubles. They had 10,000 rubles. And they ran right away. They're running. And they took it to the money to the gevir. And they put it on the anti-Semite's table and said, here. And they took the chasen out and they got him ready for the chasen. While they're taking him, they're going to get the chasen. So the Kedusha slave and the Naim HaLamalcha asked the Baal Tanya, how did you know that? So he said, I didn't know, but I knew that if he'll give one penny, I know that if the heart opens, that's a shniptavik, you understand? If the heart opens just to give something, if it was gonna be the dogs, and if it would have been closed, so he said, then what? Then I knew that it was finished. But once I saw that he gave that penny, then it, to me it meant that a Jewish heart was now open for business. And if a Jewish heart is open for business, even though that's what the Rebbe says, he stole the shniptavik, don't begin with something great. If the Rebbe would have pulled from him, if the Tanya would have tried to get out from him 100 rubles, it would have been finished. Because the man was a stingy, closed up, mitzumtzum dika person. But once the Rebbe made a crack, and he gave that penny, so then the Tanya said, then I knew that it was just a question of time. It might not have been 10 minutes, but I knew that within the next hour or two, we're going to have the 10,000 rubles. The man's a millionaire. It was just a question of making that first opening. The end of it, you want to know the end of the mice is, the end of that ma'aser was that night they were making the chasna. In the meantime, the anti-Semite, the pirates, he had an interesting thought. The thought was, why should I send this 10,000 rubles, a lot of money? In those days, why should I send the 10,000 rubles to the Tsar, to the government? I have 10,000 rubles. So he had this idea that he's going to run away and try to run to Poland, to run away, you know, to escape with the 10,000 rubles. He has such a good idea. You understand, when a pirate gets a good idea, he has to drink a l'chaim. So he made a couple of l'chaims. He got totally tipsy. And he was going, now, you know, all Jewish weddings used to take place by the outside of the town, by the river. You ask anybody that, when there was a river, they used to have make a chasna, because it's Mazeldik. They used to make the chasna. So the wedding was taking place over there, and everybody was singing and dancing. Who was the guest of honor? Reb Zev. Previously the miser, the Tanya invited him to be the guest of honor at the chasna at the wedding, right? So they're all dancing, everybody's mamish besimcha, this fellow has become a Jew again. And in the meantime, the parish is like half drunk, and he's trying to escape town with the 10,000 rubles, and he had to go over this rickety little bridge by the river. He smashed into the side of the bridge, and he went flying into the water. He died. And the kids, everybody ran over to see what happened. The pirates is dead. And what's sitting there on the wagon? 10,000 rubles. You know, these are the 10,000 rubles. They right away, everybody knows that Zev gave 10,000 rubles to save the Chasna Kala's life. So they brought the money back at the Chasna. They brought the money back to Zev. And Zev said that this money belongs to the Chasna Kala, and I'm giving to them as their wedding present. That they should be able to get started in life.
Can you apply this
100%. It's the same thing. A person, it's a foolish thing to begin. If you're going to start with somebody when it comes to Kiyum HaMitzvahs, you know, if you start with something, sometimes you see this, that it could be the smallest, least important type of a little minig. It could be a tiny little custom. That will get the person started. And from that little custom, it could be a tiny little thing. But if you can start the person right away, let's say with something big, like Shabbos, the same thing when you open up a person's heart to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It has to begin in such a way. The Shnip Tabak. With a little bit of Tabak. Okay, the next thing is a Moshel. Huh? Oh, after that, what the Chasna Kali, you mean? No, I don't know the chassid, that we don't know, but I'm sure that they invested wisely. But you know what? Let me just get this out, because we're not gonna have time for this now, because I really have to get moving. So I want to just on the parasha, but to do a little bit, and we'll hold these pages also, or give them back to me. We'll finish this mashal next week. But let's just do one word from the parasha. We have time to do. Alright, in Balaischa, you see that there are three words. So I want to do I put an asterisk next to the first and the second. Let's do the second one first. It goes on the first, that famous Rashi, at the beginning of the parasha, Balaischa Saneiris, right? When you lift up the candles, when you light the candles. So it says there that Cain also, the Aaron did what he was supposed to. Rashi says, Lahagish Shvach Shal Aaron Shalai Shina. That the Torah is praising Aaron that he did what Hashem told him to do, right? They asked Cain Aaron. Aaron did what Hashem told him to do. So everybody's writing about that. What do you mean? That's the praise of Aaron? That Aaron did what Hashem told him to do? What do you expect? That's the big shevach of Aaron, that he did what he was supposed to do? She says, Sipali Mar Ovi Zatzal. Listen to this interesting story. Shepam achas, pam echad, should be pam achas, holach harebi milublin. One time the chayzer, the seer of Lublin, went, Belel Purim, he left the house to go, the kriyas amagila lebes hamedrash. The chayzer from Lublin, the seer of Lublin, left his house to go to the bes hamedrash to hear Megillah. Upisaim yobshu raglov, all of a sudden his legs, his feet, were paralyzed. He couldn't walk. So he walked a little bit, and then again he couldn't move. So then what? The Hasidim that were with him, they began to carry the Rebbe to Shul. But then after a little while, he became impossibly heavy. To the point what? That they couldn't carry him anymore, which is not normal. And he says, "Gam hagiborim, haYehudi haKadosh, the chaver." Remember, I told that the Yehudi was unbelievably strong, physically strong. So he says, even the Yid haKadosh and the other Chassidim couldn't carry him. They couldn't carry the Chayza. So obviously, it had nothing to do with his weight. There was something going on. Lo Yuman ki yisuper shahayim afursim bismano. He says this was famous and known that this happened in that time. That on the way to Megillah, that they couldn't move the Chayzer from Lublin. Vitziva HaRebbe, and the Rebbe commanded, Hasher Achachim Rebbe Bunim Yisrael. So the Chayzer said, everybody should go away from him, that Rebunim from Pshischa, that the Reb Simcha Bunim, let him. Vishamati Meharav HaKadosh Rebbe Yomin from Lublin, Ki HaYehudi HaKadosh, Shal HaRebbe Rebunim, Eze Kavona Loyaz. So the Yid HaKadosh asked the Rebbe Rebunim, who was actually his Talmud, he asked the Rebbe Rebunim, what were your kavanas? Like, what, how did you do that? What were you thinking? What were your kavanas? What was your intention when you were doing that? In other words, Bamesha Zochi Yoisim Chaveira, what was your schus, your merit that you were able to take the Rebbe to Shul and none of us could move him? So he says, Heshev, he answered, Hayu Bedaiti Oz, my thought was the same as if someone told me to carry a piece of wood. That's what my thought was. As if someone would tell me to carry a piece of wood, that's what my thought was. In other words, I didn't have any Kabbalistic thoughts. I didn't get involved in any kind of mysterious, super-duper, involved, deluxe kind of thoughts. I said to myself that I'm told to do this in the same way that if someone tells me to pick up a piece of wood and carry it to the fire, that's what I did. Omer HaYehudi HaKadosh. Then the Yid HaKadosh, when he heard this from Rabbi Bunim, he says, Omer HaYehudi HaKadosh, Perish Rashi, that's the meaning of what Rashi said. Lahagit Shvacha Shal Aaron Shleishina. This is telling us the greatness of Aaron. What? Shleishina. That means that when Aaron was told to do something by Hashem, when Hashem was told Aaron to do something, it wasn't with all different chashbainas. It wasn't with all different. It doesn't mean that Aaron didn't have all these kavanas, didn't have the deepest thoughts. But to do what he was told to do, and not in any way, that it should be to him anything other than what? A pure, simple, demand of me that I must do. So he says, that's what it means, Aaron really shined, that when Aaron did mitzvahs, when he went to light the menorah, Aaron did it in such a way. His tachlis was, his point was to do what he was told to do. And beyond that, there are kavanas. But it wasn't a condition in doing what he was told to do. If you look at footnote, hey. He says, Hashvei Sefer Ismach Yisrael from Alexander, Pashba Leischa, Admar Kodesh Merb Yitzchok Zatzal Mivorka. He brings also from the Rebbe from Vorka. Pirish. Shaleishin. That doesn't mean that Aaron didn't change what God told him to do. So it doesn't mean that he didn't do something different. What's the Kiddush? Of course he did what God told him to do. What it means, he didn't change, means that he himself wasn't changed. He didn't go crazy. He didn't feel that it was something that he had to indulge in all kinds of preparations and kavanas. The main thing was that when Aaron was told to do something, his main kavanah was, first and foremost, to do what I'm supposed to do. That's what means shalei shina, that Aaron didn't change. Shalei nikav shina v'espailus b'shas hadlokas hamenor, that when you saw him lighting the candle, you didn't see him shaking or crying or carrying on. He did what he was supposed to do, Just like the Rebbe Abunim was supposed to, that the Chayza told him, bring me to Shul, and the other tzaddikim were involved in all these kavanas. And to them there was a certain delight and joy and pleasure in that. But the Rebbe Abunim's purpose here was to simply accept upon himself the will of the Rebbe. So too, Aaron accepted upon himself God's will in the simplest way. That's what he says. Could you imagine the lighting of the menorah had the deepest kavanas, the deepest Kabbalistic thoughts? But that wasn't the point. In the end, he did it in the simplest way because he was told to do it. Listen to what Rabbi Yitzchak Dvorak has said after that. He says, could you imagine if this wasn't Aaron? If this was the Beditshiva? If Hashem told the Beditshiva to light the menorah, what would have happened? He would have broken the menorah. B'shayfach Hashem and Zayis, he would have spilled out all of the oil. Legarlis lavis miha mitzvah rabba lezu because of his excitement over the mitzvah. Aval Aaron lo yishinakit, but Aaron was so great, even greater than the Beit Shemit. Aaron was so great that when you saw him light the menorah, you didn't see this at all. All you saw was a Jew that went to do what God told him to do. He says, Aval lo yishinah shalei nika by shum shinui, lo yishinah. You didn't see anything. There wasn't any shinui. There wasn't anything that you could see in him that was different. It wasn't for anybody else to see. I mean, the Beditshiva was, you know, when he did mitzvahs, it was Shvi'as HaKelim, and he was the tzaddik of the generation. But it was in such a way, it was, you know.
The whole thing of the Kasherin, this is what it means, and Shem Yichud and everything. Here,
so, just doing it like because Rabbi Yitzchak Dvorak is like this, that before when you're preparing, when you're preparing to do the mitzvah, then the tzaddik has all the kavanas and all the yichudim, and all the Ariya Kodesh, everything, that's before. But B'Shas Maiseh, when you're doing the mitzvah, you do it, the biggest kavanah that a person can have is that I'm doing this because the Baruch Shalom told me to do it. Gemarnu. All the kavanahs before, and if you want to have kavanahs after. But B'Shas Maiseh, that it should be with Pashtus, it should be in a simple way. That's the story that they say from the Beit Shemesh, but here what he says, the Vorka, this would have been the Beit Shemesh, would have gotten. If Hashem told the Beditshiva to light the menorah, the whole thing would have been broken on the floor. The oil would have all been spilled out. Because the Beditshiva was, you know, when he did mitzvahs, his davening was in such a way, it was such a hisrogshus and such a hispilus, you know, that he almost died once because he was waiting up the whole night to put on tefillin after the end of Yontif. So it was after Yontif was finished, Pesach, so he was waiting to put on tefillin for the first day, and he was sitting there until it would be the earliest time to put on talis and tefillin. And he's sitting and waiting, and he had the tefillin inside a glass case. And the second that it became time for tefillin, he pushed his hand through he got so excited, he cut himself, and he almost bled to death. The Beditshiva. That's, you know, the way that he had with such a hispilus. But it's famous and it's known that the Baal Tekeya, the one who was blowing shofar from Beditshiva died, and they needed to do Baal Tekeya, and everybody wanted to be the one to blow the shofar for the Beditshiva. So he was interviewing hundreds of people lined up, and the Beditshiva was interviewing each one. And he was asking this one, what do you think of B'Shas Maiseh when you're blowing the shofar? So this he starts to tell him from the Rosh Hashanah, from the Arizal, you know, all these things, all these kavanas. And then it came time, so finally when you came, the Beditshiva says, what do you think of this? I'll tell you the truth, I think that the sound should come out right, because I need to get paid, because I have to panasa, you know, I don't have a panasa. So I need to make a couple of dollars to blow shofar. So the Beditshiva says, he's my man. This is the man. Pashtus, even though the Beditshiva himself was an Eish L'Hava. And that, we could end with that. That was the Maaseh from the Yid HaKadosh himself. The Maaseh from the Yid HaKadosh that I told you once in Shul, that when the Yid HaKadosh was this Jew came, I think I told this to you even when we were talking about the Yid HaKadosh, that there was a person that came to Peshischa, and he was tired from the traveling and out of town, and he came to Peshiska, came to the bar, and he ordered a drink, and the bartender was a Yid. And he saw the bartender was hesitating. The Jew says, how come you're not giving me a drink? So he says, maybe, did you ever hear of the Yid HaKadosh? So the man said, of course I hear of the Yid HaKadosh. What do you think? So he says, well, the Yid HaKadosh is very sick, so all the Jews in Peshiska are fasting today. So, you know, you're new and you're a stranger, but I thought maybe I should tell you. I'm uncomfortable giving you a drink, but everybody's fasting. So he says, Taka, no, I understand. And what happened? So that Jew ran to the Bais Medrash. He opened up the Aron Kodesh in front of the people who were sitting. He screamed out, please, Rabbi Shalom, help the Rebbe get better because I have to have that drink. I really want that drink. And he came back. By the time he got back, so the Rebbe, already the fever broke, the Yid HaKadosh, he was feeling better. And the Yid HaKadosh said there was something at this exact moment, a tefillah, an unbelievable tefillah. And they found out that it was this Yid that was screaming in the Beis Medrash that I gotta get back to my beer. And that's what did it for the Rebbe. So the Rebbe said, the Yid HaKadosh said, no, he says he was the only one that really, really wanted me to get better, Pemis. He says, you know, everybody was not, like, well, I appreciate all your davening, but that Yid, he really wanted that beer. And he really wanted that beer. And it worked. You know, that pashtus of what? It's a certain simple and clear and straight. Before kavanas, after kavanas, but shas maise, to do what you're told to do. And that's the greatness of Aaron Shloish Shina. That with all of his kavanas, with all of his unbelievable feelings and thoughts, he was able to light the menorah. To us, we said, what do you mean? Because we also light the menorah. But we're not Aaron HaKohen. You see, if it'd be the Baditshva, it'd be. And Aaron HaKohen was able to light the candle. So the Yid HaKadosh and the Vorka is saying, what an unbelievable thing that Aaron HaKohen was able to light the menorah. What a madrega that he could light the menorah. With all of that excitement, all that feeling was contained just to do what the Baruch Shalom told him to do. Finish Gemara. That's it. Right? Okay, so we'll continue next week. Shkaya.